Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
We love books so much
that we're not going to talk about them.
Yeah, we're going to not speak about speak.
See?
Totally. I guess really quick before we start talking about the book, I just wanted to actually issue a spoiler warning ahead of time, like we usually fail to do.
Before we spoil three things.
Yeah, the spoiler in this book, I don't think it ruins your enjoyment of the book, but it just so happens that it's also a sensitive issue, and we're going to issue a trigger warning this week with the podcast as well, because there's going to be a lot of discussion about sensitive topics. But I have to give it a spoiler warning, because if I give you the trigger warning, you will then know what the spoiler is. So it's all wrapped up together. So this week, we're going to be talking about rape. And if that makes you super uncomfortable, then you should probably turn off the podcast and just wait until we come back next week.
Yep. And if you have problems with spoilers, you should probably also go ahead and turn it off right now and wait until you've read the book, because otherwise you're going to discover that the protagonist was raped.
Yeah.
So that's why she acts the way she acts.
Yep. And we have no jokes about that, so moving on.
as we shouldn't.
Yeah. You guys, yeah, if you're expecting rape jokes, you should also turn off the podcast.
Yeah,
and this... then go hit yourself in the head with a hammer for being a horrible human being.
This probably isn't really the place to go for it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I could cook one up if I had to, but
ugh.
I don't really want to.
Please don't.
I just said. I just told you I don't want to. Look at me being all decent and stuff over here. Give me a cookie.
Believing that women are real people. Thank you, Ben. I guess men can get raped too, so people are people.
That's true. That is actually in any discussion of rape and rape jokes. Let's make sure we add the constant ho-ho-holing about people going to prison and getting raped can get added to that list.
Yeah, by the way, that's not funny, guys.
No, it's...
it's still rape.
It's not, and even if it wasn't the rape thing that... makes it not funny. At this point, it's so hacky it wouldn't be funny anyway. So, just stop it.
So you're being a shithead on two different levels.
That's right.
So shut the fuck up.
You're trivializing something that's very important. Well, important is wrong. The wrong word, probably. Something significant. And you're being a bad at comedy, so...
yeah.
Stop trying to be funny by being unfunny.
Yeah. In... quick non-book related news, Ben and I have a Novel Ideas Podcast intern.
Yes.
We're very excited about it.
As we had lolled about fairly recently.
Yeah, I remember all the jokes we made about having an intern who we wouldn't pay, maybe give them chocolate sometimes. They would probably not actually get to put it on a resume ever or be impressive with it. Well, we actually got an application for an intern.
That's right. And since it's the only one we got, we went ahead and hired him on the spot.
Yeah! So congratulations! we don't know what he wants his radio name to be.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't want to be on the radio.
That's what he said.
So
we'll cook up some stuff for him to do. And we'd also like to apologize that you sent us the email on May 20th, and we read it for the first time today. Shows you how much email we get.
So you can send us an email, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
And we'll get back to you in 2 to 3 weeks.
And within
time,
at least 3 weeks, we will respond.
We will read it. We might not respond.
That's true. We might not even do that.
See, if we actually got email, that's the sort of thing I would have an intern do.
Right. Yeah, so send us just hundreds of emails so we can give our intern something to do.
Yeah, guys, stop slacking. Jeez. All right. This week we read Speak by Laurie Halse Anderson. We picked it because it was about time for a YA selection.
Yep, this is a rotation selection.
Yes, I've read it. Or I had read it before in high school and enjoyed it, so I suggested that we give it a shot.
And so we did. I'm sorry. I'm terribly unprofessional. This podcast has been brought to you by Jack Daniels.
Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
So the genre of this book is YA. YA. Have we discussed if YA counts as a genre?
I don't think so, but I feel like there's like YA and then sub-genres of YA.
I agree.
And this is like a, like, healing, I don't,
I think
like trauma happens to the narrator and they heal type of YA.
I guess so. I mean, most of our previous YA, it feels like, has been dystopian.
Yeah, I know. We've read a ton of dystopia. Sci-fi.
Right.
This is just, like, straight up takes place in the real world fiction.
So, when I list a genre as YA, I guess what I think of are kids in a school interacting without fantastical elements.
Yep.
And if you want to go subgenre from there, it almost doesn't matter. That's why it's either dystopian YA or just plain YA, probably. Because apparently no one writes science fiction YA that's utopian.
Well, The Wrinkle in Time is not dystopian.
That's true.
Just sci-fi. Just fantasy. Kind of,
it's weird, yeah.
Fair
enough.
And Holes. Well, Holes was kind of
Holes
fantastical.
Holes is, well, it's kind of fantastical. It's kind of just YA, though.
Yeah.
Because there are kids doing stuff.
Interacting.
And the fantastical stuff is kind of like within a reality that where you don't need to necessarily reorder your understanding of science or something.
Novel Ideas Podcast, the podcast where we talk about other books we've already talked about.
If we can just do another year or two's worth of episodes, we can just start doing that.
Cross-reference ourselves nonstop. This, like, book really reminded me of this book that we already talked about.
3 minutes of content on the book we actually read that
week. If you turn to episode 14, you'll notice.
That's right. By the way, you're going to have to go listen to that to recognize any of the following discussions.
Yes. We will never do that. Well, we might talk about other books a lot, but we won't be snobs about it.
I don't know. We'll see what the holiday special is. Novel cross-reference ideas. Which I guess wouldn't be all that novel at all. So our plot synopsis this week is,
there, yeah.
Because, like, she doesn't talk.
Yeah. This, a very ironic, purposefully ironic book title of Speak, in which the main character rarely speaks, and when she does, it's to kids her own age. I don't know if she says, like, a single word to an adult until the very end of the book.
Yeah, until, like, the last sentence.
Yeah.
Give or take. So, the actual summary.
Yeah, the actual summary. So, Melinda, who's our main character, starts the school year. She's a social pariah because she went to a party over the summer. She called the cops on the party and they came and broke it up, and, you know, so people are kind of pissed about that. So she spent the last month of the summer totally on her own. She seems to be not functioning entirely properly. She doesn't have any friends anymore, has a hard time going to class and concentrating, skips a lot, her grades are fucked up, she can't talk to adults, she keeps getting weirdly tongue-tied every time she tries. And we get mostly just her kind of cynical, snarky inner dialogue and don't really know what's up with her until further on into the book when you discover that at that party she attended, one of the upperclassmen at the school raped her and she called the police to get help and has generally been messed up ever since because she didn't actually tell anybody about it.
Right, she didn't end up getting the help or reporting it or anything. Mm-hmm. So the setting for this story is Syracuse in the present day.
Mm-hmm. Or present day from when it was published.
Right.
But basically the present day.
Basically the present day. It'll feel like the present day, I don't know, as long as society doesn't turn into dystopia, probably just about forever. The point of view is first person present tense.
Yes. So, aside from the flashbacks, everything else is happening in real time.
Right. And so it's all told through the eyes of Melinda Sordino,
mm-hmm.
who is our protagonist.
I just make a quick comment, actually, about the present tense.
Yes.
I was trying to formulate my thoughts. The difference between present and past tense, aside from the fact that, you know, one's happening now and one happened back then, is that in past tense stories, you always know that at least, you know, the narrator made it out because they're talking about what happened.
Right.
Possibly had a chance to reflect and make up their mind on everything that happened and draw connections and stuff for you. And present tense, especially considering Melinda's trauma, works really well because you're just getting her thoughts confused as she's trying to sort through them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it makes the book work a lot better than if she was like, let me tell you about my freshman year of high school.
Right. I think for this book especially, that is effective. I mean, it's a choice.
Yeah.
sometimes, because I think sometimes it does service the story really well. And sometimes it's probably just what the author is comfortable writing in from that particular moment where they wanted to try it.
Ben is a cold and it's disgusting.
That is true. Apologize for any frogginess, for any sexy phlegm voice that arouses the listeners.
Do not have
that. Yes, also my obnoxious laughter is likely to turn into a coughing fit today. I guess let's talk about Melinda a little bit.
Okay, so Melinda's our protagonist.
Yep, freshman in high school.
Mm-hmm.
As we just mentioned, traumatic experience towards the end of the summer.
Yep.
She is very cynical. She is pretty detached, I would say.
Yeah.
She
watches everyone in the school without really participating in it.
Yeah, definitely. She's become an observer, and the couple of times she kind of joins in, even for just a few minutes, she kind of regrets it, even.
Yeah, like Heather dragging her to the pep assembly, and then someone goes, "You're the girl who called the cops on that party," and then those people are all pissy at her.
Yep. Or when she showed up at a basketball game, or I guess right after a basketball day game, kind of by accident.
Yeah.
And got an invitation to go hang out with a guy that she was kind of befriending and maybe sort of could have liked given different circumstances. Uh-huh. And
his parents, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's a super nerd. We'll get to him later. But she turns it down, like, immediately regrets even being there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She's kind of, I mean, she's very much an outcast, though has kind of chosen to be that to some degree, too.
Yeah, and I guess we can just talk about that right now.
Yeah, we might as well.
Because we already said, you know, she's dealing with this issue from her trauma. And I think in books like this, I've read not a lot of other YA, but some other YA where something happens to the main character that other people misinterpret. So, you know, oh, she's a slut or a whore or whatever, but she was really, like, getting raped or whatever's happening. And it always feels like the entire school turns against the main character, and, like, everyone's going out of the way to be nasty to her, no one will be friends with her. And in this book, some people are kind of nasty to her, but there are definitely people who are willing to be nice to her, too, and it seems like her isolation isn't so much no one will speak to her, it's that she won't speak to anybody else.
Yeah, she won't respond to adults at all and to her peers barely.
Yeah.
And there aren't really people who reach out to her so much, but there are definitely some people who seem willing to connect if she's willing to connect with them. And even, you know, again, the lab partner we already mentioned seems to have, like, a minor connection anyway, just maybe from being in the same place at the same time and her acting kind of weird when she bothers to show up to class.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe he's kind of fascinated by that a little bit in spite of himself.
Yeah.
Also, we probably should have brought up the unreliable narrator. I guess you kind of implied it.
Yeah.
By saying that she's kind of still working through some of her thoughts. But, I mean, the things she thinks are heavily colored by her psychological condition, which is not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, you know, if you're in a situation where you feel horrible about yourself and you don't know what happened and you can't, like, deal with people because crowds freak you out. Mm-hmm. And talking to people freaks you out. And then someone can say something or look at you in a way that, like, makes you think they hate you or are purposefully trying to call you out.
Right.
They might not actually be doing that.
Right, yeah. Or even just reading civility as hostility, even.
Mm-hmm.
Like, something completely opposite.
I mean, high schoolers can be twats.
Yeah, for sure. Frequently are. Even the good kids can be.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just tends to be an angsty time for everybody.
Yeah.
To whatever degree you experience angst. I mean, I was angsty by my standards for a couple of years, which by most people's standards is probably not that angsty. But for me, it was pretty damn angsty. And certainly I knew people who were pretty intolerable for a year or two before they got the fuck over themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just part of the experience. And, I mean, we have proof of Melinda being afraid of crowds and people numerous times, but I think kind of her little closet hideaway is a good indicator of that. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe we should have put that on the symbol list, and I'm starting to think about it, because it's this isolated place that is literally forgotten about by the school.
Uh-huh.
And
it's her own space.
She turns it into her space, exactly. And she seems like a character who could be kind of fun under better circumstances.
Yeah.
She's a couple, I mean, she comes across as more angsty and cynical than she does actually snarky, for the most part. But I think maybe a more mature version of her, maybe, and less damaged version of her might be a little snarky.
Yeah,
it's a little quirky.
Some of her stuff's kind of funny. Like,
yeah.
She's not...
Like Maya Angelou on the poster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not a complete downer, so...
Yeah, I agree, for the record. And it makes her come across as put upon, even though if you can separate yourself from her narration for a second, you definitely do realize that she's kind of pulling some of it onto herself.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into the lab partner instead of just leaving that dangling.
Okay, David.
Yes, David. He's an uber nerd.
On college admission day, was keeping a spreadsheet of which colleges the seniors got into, finding out their standardized test scores to discover which standardized test scores he had to get in order to get into those colleges.
Right.
And he's a freshman. Like, he's not taking the SAT for 3 years.
He wants to get into Harvard.
This guy crazy.
And he's one of those people who, when he decides he's interested in something, like, goes and makes a spreadsheet, or
yeah,
goes and does a ton of research on it, and isn't just like, oh yeah, I think this thing is neat right now, and the things he are into are never like, oh, Game of Thrones on HBO is really cool. It's always like, this nerdy thing is interesting to me.
I was
like,
following the stock market, and I noticed that.
That would totally be a David move.
Yeah.
Or when they're doing lab stuff, he's always, I don't think that's how you're supposed... You're not going to get an A if you do that.
Yeah.
He's that kid.
He totally is that kid.
He's very well-meaning, though, I think. And so when he invites Melinda over, she's wondering, oh, maybe he kind of likes me a little bit. And he's like, oh, we'll have pizza with my parents. It'll be fun. Which, for most high school freshmen, would probably be, like, the last thing they would want to do, is to do anything with their parents in front of a girl they like.
I was going to say, even if they did want to do pizza with their parents, because as a freshman in high school, I feel like I would have been down to do that.
Right.
But you wouldn't necessarily invite a member of the opposite sex to come.
Yeah, exactly.
You can go up to some guy and be like, hey, you want to go have pizza with my parents?
Right. Like, hey, me and my buddies are having pizza with my parents. Do you want to come with the group? Like, that's how that would go, right?
Yeah.
And she, you know, as we mentioned, turns him down. Part of her motivation was that she wasn't sure if his parents were actually going to be there. Like, she was worried about being alone with a guy.
Yeah.
Reasonably so.
Yeah.
But David comes across as probably the most harmless human being in the entire school.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's the guy. So, the social studies teacher, who we'll get to in a minute,
yeah,
comes in one day, and they had decided to have a talk about immigration and if it should be legal, or if the U.S. should have started banning immigration, like in the 1900s or something.
Because right. The teacher's basically a xenophobic bigot.
His son didn't get a job. He's convinced it's because they had to give it to a black guy instead. And so people are arguing about it, and then David decides, he stands up and basically tells him that he is xenophobic and that this is entirely inappropriate and blah, 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 and storms off and gets a lawyer to record the rest of the class sessions to make sure that the teacher doesn't say anything else inappropriate.
Right. I would summarize David's character as, if you were a sitcom dad, he's basically the kid at the high school you'd want your daughter dated.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't be worried at all.
Totally. Great grades, good school.
He'd be the, oh yes, Mr. Smith, I'll make sure she's home by 10 o'clock, no problem. And at like 9:50, he'd be like, we really have to go back, we don't want to upset your dad. And like, coming from an honest, legitimate place. Yes.
Not like in a, they're having sex with you, oh, it's 9:50. No, like, yeah, exactly. You're holding hands and about to kiss for the first time, and he's like, oh no, it's almost 10.
We can be 5 minutes late. No, we can't, I told your dad 10 o'clock.
We have to be at the doorstep at 9:59. Well, as long as we're on the topic of high schoolers, we can talk about Heather.
Sure.
She is Melinda's closest thing to a friend in the first part of the book.
Yeah.
She's new to the school, so I guess the way Melinda thinks of it, she doesn't really know any better.
Yeah.
And befriends her because she's trying to find people at the school to like her.
Yeah. And as the new kid, she's a little bit on the fringe herself.
Mm-hmm.
And is just like a, she's almost like a puppy. Like, she's just totally earnest. Really wants to be part of what's going on. And As the book develops a bit, she is perhaps a little too obsessed with trying to be, with fitting in somewhere.
Yeah, she eventually becomes so desperate to join this group that is almost letting her join that she decides Melinda is holding her back and she needs to cut that relationship off.
Yeah, so that happens, and then there are a couple of, there's one, the poster hanging, making, I guess, and hanging, where she's kind of gets Melinda to help out a little bit, and
Melinda draws these posters that sound really cute.
Yeah.
It's for a canned food drive, and she has, like, basketball players, like, dunking cans through basketball.
Right.
Sounds cute.
Then that kind of gets, I guess, called back a little bit at the end. She asks for Melinda to help her do decorations for the dance, and Melinda says no, because this, in the second instance, at least, it was pretty clear that Heather was trying to use her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls her on it, and I don't know, it's hard to hold it against Heather because she's so clueless.
Yeah, so I don't think Heather is supposed to be a villain or a bad guy or anything. She's just,
yeah, actually,
too eager to fit in, and
I think she's that old literary thing, the foil.
Yeah.
Because she and Melinda really are opposites.
Mm-hmm. Ben did point that out, that Heather goes completely out of her way to try and fit in, and then Melinda goes out of her way to not fit in.
Yeah, and so by shoving them into the same space for a while, you can highlight that.
Yeah.
enough so that I actually wondered if it was a theme. We decided probably not.
Yeah.
Just a character trait, yeah. As long as we're still doing high schoolers,
yep.
Rachel Rochelle,
mm-hmm.
who was
Melinda's best friend. Sorry.
Yeah, that's all good. and is not so much, they're not really communicating. They didn't talk the last part of the summer, and then Melinda's not really talking to anybody after yep. that. And they kind of sort of start to reconnect towards the end. And Rachel is, one of those folks who gets to high school and is probably also trying just a little too hard to pick
yeah.
a group. So she becomes an exchange student.
Groupie,
essentially.
She's sleeping with them.
Well, the freshman in high school
yeah.
version of
yeah.
a groupie, where you just are trying really hard to hang out with them.
Just hanging out with all the exchange students.
Calls yourself Rochelle.
Trying to speak French, wearing yeah. black eyeliner, doing
right.
all that. And I was actually going to say, one of the things I appreciated about the Melinda-Rachel relationship is that their friendship didn't, like, just totally end. They still kind of talk, but it's not because of, like, a guy. I feel like
True.
Girlfriends in books don't get along a lot because of a guy. And here it's like, well, the party thing happened, and that was awkward, and then Melinda refused to talk to her. And then she got to school and started ingratiating herself with this new group. And apparently started ignoring her other friends as well.
Right.
Which we learned from Ivy later. So it's not like Rachel has it out for Melinda. Which
right.
I appreciated.
Yeah, it wasn't the former best friends who are now worst enemies
yeah.
trope.
I mean, they don't really get along, but they're not. I mean, Rachel even talked to her without insulting her.
True, yeah.
Not a lot, but she kind of goes, yeah, hi, what's up?
Yeah, a little bit. And they're, I don't know, I think that friendship helps a little bit to, like, Melinda cares enough about her to kind of partway pull herself out of her shell
uh-huh.
in the last quarter of the book.
Yeah, when she tells Rachel about what happened, that'd be tough.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the guy that Rachel's interested in that did it to her, which would make it even tougher. And when she revealed that, pretty predictably, Rachel got upset.
Uh-huh.
Which you would expect her to get upset. Maybe not necessarily upset at Melinda like she did, but that's certainly within the realm of realistic possibilities.
Yeah.
And so this guy in question is Andy Evans, who also goes by Andy Beast, and also goes by just
It,
capital IT.
Melinda's brain.
Yes.
Understandably so.
There's not a whole lot to say about him. He's just a douchebag.
Yeah, he's a bad person and an unrepentant rapist.
Yep.
And apparently, like, douchey to other girls as well. He comes on strong. We don't know
yeah.
if he has assaulted anyone else, but he's probably tried.
He's definitely made people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He has a reputation for being kind of a handsy douchebag
uh-huh.
who, it sounds like, gets away with it to some degree by basically being gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. He's like that really, really cute guy, and you're so flattered this cute guy's into you, and then he starts being a jerk, and you're like, oh, shit.
Right, but maybe it takes a couple incidents of jerkiness before you let it kick in all the way, because
yeah.
you're too busy admiring him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, he's actually a little bit of awkward speculation during the outlining, because you see this kind of character from time to time, the one-dimensional, I guess, villain, but specifically with characters who are rapists. And I was kind of saying that I think it would be, not necessarily in this book, actually I think definitely not for this book, because it's too short and not telling this kind of story, but I think it'd be interesting to see a rapist character who is not a one-dimensional douchebag.
Yeah, not in, like, the vein of, he's a good guy who did a bad
thing. Oh, no, certainly not.
Just like, well, I'm sure he has some other personality trait besides that.
Right, besides, I'm a rapist.
Yeah.
probably something, I mean, probably likes to play Nintendo or something, I don't know. Whatever, it's not that important, I was just kind of saying that in literature or in movies or TV or whatever. You know, I said in the Lifetime movie version of this book, he definitely would have been dead by the end.
And no one would have cared.
And no one would have cared, because a lot of stories about rape end up as revenge fantasies, I think.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about a little more in the issues. It's just something I guess it's more something I don't see, which is why I'm interested in it more than trying to make some statement about the issue, certainly.
Ben does not think that rapists should be portrayed sympathetically in any way.
No, yeah, it's not.
I feel like you have to make that point clear, because right, otherwise, yeah. I don't want people to think that's what you're saying.
Right. It's a really fine line. Like, if you could write a complex character who did something like that without, which probably would have to be, you know, maybe 25% sympathetic just to get inside their head, but without condoning what they did, like, writing that character would be really tough.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I'm capable of tackling it, certainly. Not that I write enough to be capable of something like that anyway, but it would just be interesting to see someone do a good job of it, I guess, is what I'm saying. So, non-high schooler characters.
Yes.
We mentioned the Mr. Neck, the xenophobic bigot. There's really not... He's also just kind of a douchebag.
He's a sports coach who was hired to coach sports, but he has to teach a class, too, so he teaches social studies.
Right.
He's that guy.
We've all had that guy.
Yeah, they were at our high school, too.
Oh, yeah. They're at every high school.
Thank God I never had one.
Yeah, if you're taking...
They're apparently the worst teachers ever.
If you take enough honors classes, you can usually avoid them.
Yeah. but the other teacher, who's more significant, is Mr. Freeman.
Yeah, he's the art teacher. He is kind of silly, kind of funny. He's the hippy-dippy art guy.
Yeah, he's always talking about expressing your soul and all this stuff, and, like, working on his own painting, and everyone's always like, what the hell are you talking about?
Don't try to draw a tree. Try to feel feelings and make those into a tree.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys.
Like, what?
Is very upset with the school board for cutting his supply budget.
Yeah. As most arts teachers are.
Yeah, to be fair. He is entertaining, but you also get a couple of flashes of him being a teacher who actually does manage to connect with kids.
Yeah, he's not 100% just goofy art teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kids who try do seem to really enjoy his class.
Yep. Like, a couple of the, you know, Melinda watched a couple of the seniors basically saying goodbye to him, and one of them was even one of the cheerleaders, which weirded her out a little bit. So he made some connections, students making a point of seeing him before they leave the school, and he gives Melinda a ride when he sees her out in a snowstorm, essentially.
Yeah, one thing that I notice is Mr. Freeman is pretty much the only adult character who takes notice that something's wrong with Melinda and asks her about it.
Yeah, well, takes notice, at least in the form of, you seem to be in pain, instead of notice in the form of, why aren't you going to all of your classes and getting good grades?
Right, because her parents are more like, what, you used to be great, and now you're a skipping class, angsty teenager.
Right.
He's like, hey, yeah, you seem to have some sadness, what's going on with that?
Yeah, like, if you want to talk about it, you can talk about it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then I'll just drop you off in front of the store and not be the pushy adult guy.
Yeah.
So he even has some sensitivity and ability to read the room and the person.
Uh-huh. And I think He's the only adult she talks to.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, she doesn't... I don't think she says a single word to any other adult.
Oh, I think she says to her mom, I'm sick.
Oh, at one yeah. point.
That's but right. that's... That doesn't really count. Because it allows her mom to say, you must be sick if you're talking to me.
Right, to make the bitchy comment.
Yeah.
And then to her credit, feel kind of bad about making it immediately. It's like, oh, shit, Trey, to help our daughter.
But aside from that, yeah, he's the only adult she talks to. And at the end, he's the one that she decides to tell about what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's the closing of the book.
Let me tell you about it.
Fine. Let me tell you about what happened to me. And, you know, good for him. We need teachers like that out there, right?
Yep.
I can think of a couple of instances of teachers who were good people and who actually paid attention to students catching stuff that no one else caught.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really want to share specifics. Here, I don't know that's an appropriate place to do it, especially because the story doesn't really directly involve me.
Yeah.
But they're out there, and it's cool when it happens.
I agree. All right.
All right, so hit a couple of our issues. I mean, the main one is obvious. There's a rape.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates this trauma and this kind of, I don't want to call it PTSD because I can't diagnose that, but this PTSD-ish.
Yeah, she's definitely dealing with trauma in the aftermath of this event.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's the appropriate term for it either, but, it's really just dealing with the issue of, I mean, several issues that rape usually happens, from someone you know.
Right.
So she and Andy weren't, like, friends or anything, but
she knew who he was.
Yeah, she knew who he was, and she was into him at first before he started taking things too far.
Right, too far, too fast.
The issue that it happens with teenagers.
Right.
And
really young teenagers. She was 13 at the time.
That's really sad.
Yeah, I did actually wanted to just to separate it from the rape part for a moment. Is liberal as we are, I think even we would be conservative enough to say that 13-year-olds shouldn't be having consensual sex, even let alone being put in the position Melinda was put in.
13 is awfully young. It's
real young.
Yeah. And even if you do think it's consensual as an adult, you might have a different view. I don't really know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like, it's just, you can't make those kinds of decisions, I think.
But suffice it to say, when you're a 13-year-old at a party, who's had a couple beers, and a senior comes and forces himself onto you, that's in no situation in any world okay.
Well, it's a crazy power imbalance there, right?
Yeah.
Incoming freshman versus incoming senior.
Sports star.
Super good looking.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of charisma, at least, that works until his hands rove too much.
Uh-huh.
It's a bad position. Like, that girl shouldn't be alone with him in the first place.
Yeah.
If at all possible. It's probably a good thing that most girls that age travel in packs most of the time.
And then the third issue that deals with is, How many rapes go unreported? So, you know, Melinda does finally speak up about it,
mm-hmm.
but it takes her almost a full year.
It takes a second assault.
Right, people to find out about it.
Assault and battery rather than a second sexual assault.
Right. Well, it would have been a sexual assault.
Sounds like it, yes.
Yeah, she finally has to speak up, and, I mean, she's kind of started healing a little bit by that point. At the end of the school year, she's figuring some of her stuff out. She's at least can say, like, this is what happened to me at this party.
Right.
She's, you know, feeling comfortable enough that she feels like she doesn't need our closet anymore, class is going well. Like, there's some stuff. She's gardening at home, which is a big part of it.
Right, yeah, she's starting to
help all that stuff grow.
Yeah, and interact with people a little bit more, even if she's not really talking to them a whole lot yet.
Uh-huh. But there are... I don't know the exact numbers. This could be maybe something our intern could do for us.
Yeah, there you go.
But I think, like, 1/4 of rapes are actually reported. Like, I'm almost 100% sure it's less than half. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's substantially less than half of rapes get reported.
Depending where you get your numbers from, anything I've ever read on it says that less than half. I think I've read things saying it's as high as in the 40s percent-wise, but it's not a high percentage, regardless.
Yeah, and, you know, there are people walking around who have faced this and are dealing with their issues, and it might take them years and years and years if they ever manage to get over it. And, yeah, I think this book is highlighting that as well.
Yeah, and, I mean, a year is a pretty, or a school year at least. I mean, it's probably about right. If you think of major grief or trauma in your life, it's probably about the time it takes for something like that to process in full.
Mm-hmm.
And it will stick with you. I mean, people who lose a parent or a sibling or someone really, really close like that, they never feel good about it. They're just able to think about it and still function after a while, you know? And this kind of puts that in a similar vein with the time span involved. And, you know, again, not a psychologist or an expert, but I would assume that's probably a pretty normal time span.
Yeah. So,
and I guess we wanted to go ahead and mention that these ideas are usually linked to feminism, though are not necessarily ideas that only feminists espouse, I would say, at this point.
Because it tends, so much rape happens to be toward women, and feminism at least did a lot to try and tell people, hey, this isn't the victim's fault. Stop saying it is.
Because there was definitely a time when it was 100% or really close to 100% on the victim.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if we might read this in the future for the podcast. But Tessa the D'Urbervilles is a book where toward the beginning of it, the main character is raped by, she's like kind of a peasant-ish and he's a richer guy.
Right.
And how society just, if you were raped, society would completely shun you, and you're a horrible person, and you could never redeem yourself. And the book is basically the author saying, hey, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, you should feel bad for this woman.
Right.
So, yeah, and that was written in, like, the 1800s. So, that, I say, is a pretty common thread for certain parts of society for a long time.
Yes, and on a lighter note, if you want to play the cross-reference game, go check out the 50 Shades of Grey podcast.
I guess I just talked about Tessa the D'Urbervilles in that podcast, didn't I? And in the future, the Tessa the D'Urbervilles episode.
That's right.
Yeah, so I would, yeah, it is tied to feminism. Feminists kind of help bring that idea to the forefront. Mm-hmm. But I would say if you call it strictly a feminist issue, then you're being a moron, because it's not a feminist issue, it's a person issue.
Right.
And everyone should be concerned about it.
Well, I'd say it's definitely on the list of things that people who are even a little bit progressive-minded try to make sure they're thinking about in ways that are compassionate and sympathetic.
Unless apparently they're one of the Republicans who ran for office in the fall.
They
said all sorts of silly things.
They generally don't consider themselves to be even a tiny bit liberal or progressive, so maybe that fits. That could be a whole nother podcast there.
We'll move on from that.
Yes. To a different type of political issue, specifically school politics.
Yeah.
Mostly in the form of moral conservatism among school leaders and just getting really upset over silly things in the form of the school changing its name like 7 times during the school year.
Yeah. That's like one of the goofy threads throughout the book is they start out as the Trojans, but that's too sexual because of condoms. So then they become the Blue Devils, but then, you know, the devil.
Right.
So then they become the Tigers.
The Tigers are endangered.
Yeah.
This is actually a student group that did this, yeah.
Not appreciate that. So then they become the Wombats. They had, like, 4 choices, and Wombats got, like, 28 votes because everyone else had write-in suggestions.
There were, like, 1,400 write-ins.
And then they decide Wombats is too goofy, so they become the Hornets.
And then the cheerleaders chant Horny Horny Hornets as part of their cheer.
And it almost gets changed again, but the senior class manages to write an impassioned letter about how their lack of identity has really screwed them up, and they are now Hornets and are proud of it.
It was silly, but one of those farcical things that has just a little bit of truth to it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, some of that stuff, I'm sure somewhere out there, someone has changed a mascot from Trojans or Blue Devils to something innocent because it's
I'm sure.
Inappropriate.
Not to mention if, I think at our high school, if Horny Horny Hornets, not that our mascot was the Hornets, had been part of a chant during a basketball game, that there would have been no question whatsoever about changing the mascot. That wouldn't have happened, but the cheerleading squad definitely would have been sanctioned for that.
Yeah.
Those girls would have gotten in trouble.
You guys can't say that.
You can't say horny, horny hornets.
Well, why?
People might think of hornets with boners. Yeah, because that's what I think about when I think of hornets.
Yeah.
Hornets with giant, erect penises.
That's really weird.
It's totally weird.
Don't talk about it.
That's why I'm saying it, to point out how weird it is.
I don't like it.
I don't like it. Stop it.
You can't encourage teenagers to be horny. Everyone knows that.
You don't have to encourage them to be horny. You can try your hardest to discourage them from being horny. It won't work. They're teenagers.
In addition to that, there's just like a little bit of politics also in the different groups of students. She kind of does that catalog at the beginning of, you have, you know, the jocks and the blah, blah, blah. And especially with the Marthas, which are the do-gooder types that Heather's trying to break into.
Yeah, but they're do-gooder types of a certain vein.
Yeah, like, they all wear the same outfits, which is weird.
Yeah, they remind me of some groups from other high school drama,
comedies,
things. Yeah, there's,
that's what I thought at the beginning of the book, actually, when she was saying, here are the different groups of kids at this school. And I was like, every high school movie ever made, they're like, you walk into the cafeteria, here's where everyone sits. And I was like, that's not how it works, but okay.
I, of course, was thinking of the beginning of 10 Things I Hate About You, when he's getting the tour and he's pointing out all the different groups of weirdos out on the quad.
And I was thinking about Mean Girls.
Yeah, another good example.
Janice introduces her to everything. And I was like, well, I was a band kid, but I didn't sit with other band kids necessarily.
Yeah.
Actually, my lunch table made it into the yearbook. They did a lunch table article.
Well, why not?
Yearbooks are stupid.
Yeah, they have nothing better to do.
Yeah, and they had the so-and-sos and the so-and-sos, and our table was the Eclectics, because we were from all sorts of different groups and sitting together. Isn't that wacky?
How dare you?
I was like, really, your write-ups about that were kind of weird? Like, that was the write-up. But it was funny because they were interviewing us, and we were trying to explain why we had such a good time.
Yeah.
But we couldn't explain that we played games of Would You Rather that involved, you know, having sex with a goat in front of your parents.
Right.
Or in a vat of nacho cheese, or discovering your parents in a furry orgy. You can't say that stuff in the yearbook, so we're just like, we used to talk about funny things. Use the F word copiously.
Yes, indeed.
Typical 17-year-old girls. Chilling the words. Yeah, so. Anyway.
upsetting the social order of things.
Apparently.
See, that could have been That could have been if a couple years down the road, and the more mature angle to take on that is, here's the eclectic table, and then the satirical article on how you're upsetting the social order of the school.
Yeah. Ruining everything.
Like, really taking you to task for it, tongue-in-cheek.
Why aren't you sitting with band who dorks, Gab? What's wrong with you?
How dare you? Alright, so any plot points you want to hit?
We already hit them.
Sounds good to me. Alright, themes. Rape is bad, guys.
Yeah. In case you hadn't figured that out, like, yeah.
I mean, I'm glad you listened to us so we can tell you these things, because I know otherwise.
Don't own slaves.
You just wouldn't stay on the straight and narrow, right? Murder is bad. Rape is bad. Stop owning slaves, you guys. You've got to free your slaves.
You got it. Abraham Lincoln told you like 150 years ago. Actually, Emancipation Proclamation is 1863, exactly 150 years ago.
Damn!
Nailed it. So.
History.
Yeah. Swoosh. But I think that is definitely a theme. That's not really the point of the book.
Because no, I don't think it's.
People already know that going into it.
It's kind of I guess that's the closest we're going to come to a rape joke in this book, in this podcast.
It's a horrible thing that you should never do.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say more the main theme, as shown by the title and the fact that Melinda has trouble talking, is that you really need to speak about these issues and what's happening to you. And if you talk to other people about your problems and make them aware, then you can work through it and heal.
Yep, I agree. I don't think I have anything to add to that.
Yeah, I feel like instead of speak as a title saying, you know, it's a book about people speaking, it's almost a, not a command, but a suggestion.
Yeah.
Telling Melinda, speak.
Speak, girl, speak.
You can do it.
We have a symbol this week.
We do.
Yay. Trees.
Trees.
Yeah. Everyone in art class is given a topic which they're going to work with for the whole year. Hers is trees. So she's come up with a tree, so she's doing all these different representations of trees.
Mm-hmm. Trying to make a good tree. She's having trouble with it. All of her trees are dead-looking and wilting and don't look real, and she's really struggling with that. And then toward the end of the book, she's gardening and helping things grow, and her trees kind of start springing to life again.
And for that matter, Ivy gives her advice on how to do the leaves so it looks good. And as soon as she talks to one of her friends more than two words, then all of a sudden her trees have a little more life to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of obvious.
Yeah.
And then the English teacher is also obsessed with symbolism, which I feel like is an extra clue.
Yeah. Ben thought that the English teacher was constantly harping on symbolism, so you would be on the lookout for symbols reading them.
I did think that was a possibility, yes.
Also, if you read the Scarlet Letter in high school, your English teacher will, in fact, make you find 10 billion.
Yeah, they probably will.
Just so you know. So there's one point of interest I think Ben needs to talk about, the report cards.
Oh, yeah. So, this is also related to the instant response of Twitter sometimes making you look kind of like a twit. And that is that at the end of each term, the book is organized by the four quarters of the school year, she throws her report card out there, her grades not so good except for art, where she always has an A. And one of the first two, I read it, and I was like, you get a grade for lunch at that school? That's really weird. You get a bad grade in lunch at that school?
You have a D in lunch?
I'm like, what the hell? And that was a thought that honestly inhabited me, because I wasn't looking at it very carefully. And then after I started to get the gist that something was really, really wrong in her life, and then the next one that came up, I actually paid attention to it and was like, oh, social life and clothes are in there too. That's not on the school report card. Lunch was her own grade. She was assigning herself poorly for not ever sitting with other people. I'm an idiot.
Poor Ben.
In conclusion.
Ben's an Udi. You should not listen to any of his opinions. Yes. And only listen to me.
I am completely invalidated.
That is the conclusion you should draw.
Only Gabs is right. So tune in next week for the Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with Gabs.
Gabs being right.
Who loves books.
I sure do.
And I'm going to be in the room, but I just have to sit quietly and listen because I need to learn.
Exactly. You finally seen the light. It took you long enough.
Took a couple of decades, but I got there.
You figured it out. So, strengths and weaknesses.
All right. Well-written YA.
Yep.
I think it handles the issue well.
Yeah, I think Melinda's reaction is very believable.
Yes.
And rings true.
Yeah, in that it's told through her eyes, and so, you know, once again, the fact that she was an outcast was at least partially her deciding to be that way. I think, a really good writing decision. I think that she definitely raises a character who has some trauma. The only issue I take, I have two pretty minor ones. One that she comes across as very cynical and angsty, and for the first about quarter of the book, it was a little too much for me until I started, again, to kind of catch the gist that there was more to it than just the party.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, there have to be kids at that school who don't give a shit about the party. Go hang out with them. And then I realized that, oh no, like, she's damaged, and okay, I guess that's reasonable. And it actually pretty much stopped bothering me at that point. Like, I was able to look back on it and go, okay. Then the other thing is the humor was present and fairly present, actually. It was a running thread, but none of it was the kind that just made me laugh out loud. It was all the kind of humor where I would go, yeah, that was kind of silly. And then, like, 10 or 20 pages later, be like, okay, that was actually really silly. Yeah, but overall, I mean, it was well done. Like, the good far outweighs the bad as far as the quality of writing goes, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I was kind of wondering, since I've already read the book and I knew it was up, I didn't have the same issues Ben did with Melinda being angsty at all, because I already knew what had happened to her. And I was wondering on a reread how much already knowing colors your view of the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. I remember enjoying it the first time, obviously, or I wouldn't have recommended it again. But I don't remember what I initially thought of it because I already knew what was up, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Interesting to ponder. And like we said at the very beginning before you had the spoiler alert, I think if you listened to all this and knew what had happened to her, you can still read the book and it won't ruin it.
Yeah, I agree because I think you... I think if you were really sharp, maybe even from the very beginning, you could figure out there was more to it than just called the cops on a party.
Yeah, it's, the point of the book is not to drop a, surprise, this happened to her!
No, yeah, it's definitely
like,
not
that's
the...
That's not the point of
it's the definitely book. Not the, what a twist, sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, so, that's why I think spoiling it is not that big of an issue.
Questions, I want to ask mine...
Okay.
First, which is, what happens her sophomore year?
In case you could understand that was what happens her sophomore year.
Yeah, like, is it way better? Probably. And then you go ahead and describe it the way you described it to me earlier.
Okay. Y'all, when I was in high school, in addition to reading Speak, we read another book by this author called Catalyst. Takes place in the same high school, same town, all that. And the main character of that book does run into Melinda at one point for a couple pages, just makes a mention of, oh yeah, you know, she's doing better, way better now, has friends, smiles.
Question answered.
Yeah. So Ben got his question answered. However, I would only recommend reading Speak. I would never recommend reading Catalyst. It's about a girl who's in the honors track in high school. Everyone in the honors track is apparently super obnoxious and completely obsessed with each other's grades. She applies, I think it's to MIT, because her mother, who's now dead, went to school there. Only college she applies to. Doesn't get into it. Completely freaks out. Has, like, a nuclear meltdown. Makes friends with a girl at the school who's either homeless or basically homeless. Like, and I don't remember exactly. This girl has, like, a 2-year-old son. She is helping her build her house or fix her house or something to do with the house. And long story short, the 2-year-old son ends up getting electrocuted and dies. And that is the book.
Does that not sound annoying just hearing the description? It sounds like a Hallmark Presents movie where the director, like, went rogue and decided to have the dark toddler dies ending or something.
And I was like, who only applies to one school? Unless the only school you're applying to is, like, KU. Not to diss KU, but if you can't get into that, you're not getting into college.
Insert state institution where you basically get in if you graduate high school here.
If you live in Kansas, you can get into KU. Because one of the admission requirements, if you fail every other requirement, is you graduated high school in Kansas, basically.
Right.
So my question was, how is Speak so good? It won several awards, including the Michael Prince Honor Book, and Catalyst. How is it so bad? I don't understand. Has she written a really good book and then a bad book? So my question is, how did this author write a good book and then a bad book?
I mean, not that every book has to be a huge hit, but
I demand answers.
I think it's hubris.
Well, I think it's...
So I can see how much emotion I can pack into the next one.
I just think it's weird because, like, the first one is totally something that would, like, could happen and feels real and is subtle, and the second one's like,
oh yeah,
here's this crazy smart girl's fucked up and only applies to one school, and then a 2-year-old dies.
The description,
like,
is completely detached from reality.
Like, that's weird. So
it's weird, and you should stop it.
Yeah, I remember we were all really excited to read it because we'd all read Speak, and then we read it. Me and all my friends were like, "This is bullshit."
You're so pissed off.
This book is horrible.
Ah, okay.
So anyway, that was an aside. It was an anti-recommendation for you guys.
That's right. Whereas for this book, you would recommend it.
I would definitely recommend
it. And I thought it was, easy read, pretty good to good. I didn't love it, but it did make me think a little more than most YA does, I would say, for sure. So I recommend it, and super easy to read.
Yeah.
So
it does a good job touching on a really heavy subject, so.
I agree with that. So what are you reading right now? Oh, that's what I'm reading.
Sorry. Woo, that just came out of nowhere. I just finished Nothing to Envy, Ordinary Lives in North Korea. I wrote America.
Did you? You sure did.
North Korea.
Hilarious.
By Barbara Demick, who is a journalist. And the book is essentially interviews she did with North Korean defectors and then put together a portrait of their lives in North Korea in addition to some outside research. And it is fascinating and really, really, really sad.
Hmm.
And just... oh, man, it's super interesting. But you will read a lot about people starving to death, because that's what North Korea did in the 1990s, apparently.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Okay.
But it's nonfiction, and I would definitely recommend it.
All right. Well, I'm reading some fiction, a book called Dogs by Nancy Kress, who I actually hadn't heard of before I decided to pick up this book. She's written like 25 novels or something. Yeah, she's been writing for a while. And this is a story about a small town in Maryland where the dogs start basically going crazy and attacking people. And there's like a virus that's infecting their brains. And so there's the whole small town quarantined by the government thing and people acting nutty because people who love dogs can get nutty about their dogs sometimes. And I don't know, it's a little more thrillery than anything, though it does, I guess the one thing it makes you think about is, so if the government's going door to door and confiscating everybody's dog, and you thought there's a decent chance that your dog was going to end up getting dissected, even if it wasn't sick yet, what would you do?
Yeah.
And my answer is probably just feel really sad.
Yeah.
No, don't take Vinny.
Karma. Yeah, Karma's going to die anyway.
Yeah, but that was the thing, because dogs who were old and feeble and injured and had never even come close to being aggressive towards anybody were, like, ripping people's throats out.
Yikes.
Because they were so aggressive because of this damn virus. So
it's the rage virus from 28 Days Later.
Yeah, it basically was the doggy rage virus. So anyway, if you have comments or questions or any form of feedback, I suppose, you can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
And we did get a comment last week with some recommendations. Sorry, I don't remember your name. But you can drop recommendations, too.
Yes, please do, actually.
You can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com, and we will check it in 2 to 3 weeks.
You can tweet us at novelideaspod.
And you can find us on iTunes.
And if you do that, leave ratings, reviews, and stuff. That helps us if we get... Actually, I think we have to get more than we've ever had, basically... Like, every day, for it to matter.
Yeah, but, probably.
But still, the principle is there. Next week, yes, we will be reading The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Yep.
Which is a bright and uplifting story, I have been led to believe.
Yeah, for anyone who's never heard, The Road is like the most depressing book.
Yeah, it's supposed to be super depressing.
So
we'll find out. So I guess that's going to be all for this week.
Yeah.
And we will see you next time.
Bye.